Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, I want to ask you a question. We saw yesterday in baseball's Hall of Fame, just one person made it, David Ortiz, and all of a sudden Barry Bonds is a victim in the eyes of many out there. And I'm curious because a texter asked an interesting question, just saying, hey, if Bonds and Clemens weren't such jerks to the media, you think it would have been any different? And my feeling is no, because it's about the steroids, but I certainly don't think it helps. When it comes to Hall of Fame voting for the NFL, is that something that anybody takes into account? Like, man, this guy was such a creep. This guy, great player, but what a jerk. Is that ever part of the conversation?
It's part of the conversation, but it can't be part of the decision. Because, again, we're smart enough at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and the board is good enough that it's like we only judge on what happens on the football field. And so it's like, for example, I mean, Terrell Owens was a jerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it took him a little bit of time to get in. And, of course, the only thing that we considered with Terrell was the fact that, he had such internal problems, where he had bad comments about Jeff Garcia when Jeff Garcia was a starting quarterback, the negative things that he said about Donovan McNabb, the problems that he caused in the locker room to a point where Andy Reid, kicked him off the Philly team, sent him home, all those different things.
And he thought Jason Witten and Tony Romo were conspiring against him.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, there's guys who have been jerks to us, all through their careers. But again, we can't take it into account. We judge for our football side, and that's the fairest way to do it. I mean, say what you want about Barry Bonds. Now, again, I go back when I was in Pittsburgh because I covered him. And, he was fine back then. That was before he got on the steroids and everything else. In the end, it's like, you're right. I mean, some guys are going to treat people like jerks. And if that's going to be the case, baseball, and you think that the baseball voters, particularly the older ones, not the newer ones, because if you saw like one of the most recent surveys, some of the newest voters all voted like over 80% to have those guys in, where it's like it was still adamant from the older guys who have been covering, the league and that for 20, 30, 40 years and whatever to vote them out. So I think it's unfair. I don't like it. And again, say what you want. It's like, back on the steroid thing. I mean, technically, that wasn't illegal at that time.
Well, illegal in society, illegal against the law, but not baseball law.
No, not baseball law, no.
Which to me is a cop-out, John, and I know we're going to talk football here in a moment. But, people that will – I'm of the belief, listen, if you're going to vote for Barry, then you vote for any steroid guy who's attached to it on any level that has the numbers.
Right.
So if you vote for Barry, you got to vote for Sosa. You got to vote for A-Rod or Manny or any of these guys. Or – you say I'm not voting for anybody attached to that, then you can't vote for A-Rod but not vote for Barry or vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Just be consistent. That's what I'm looking for from the voter.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that's a fair way to be, but I just think it's unfair the way that particularly a lot of the older voters, are treating some of the greatest players in the game. I mean, it's like we're not supposed to honor the greatest players who've ever played this game. Barry Bonds was one. Roger Clemens was one. A-Rod certainly was one. And, we have to keep them out just because, for the steroid thing, particularly when there were so many players allegedly using steroids.
Early on when I was at Stanford, the doctor there explained it, and just I'll break it down. As far as steroids, it would be like putting a monster truck engine into like a Volkswagen Beetle. Because, your muscles develop, gradually. And as your muscles develop naturally, your tendons get stronger. And so, as far as that goes, I was always thought that would be a terrible thing to do. You know, you just got to work harder. But do you remember, John, any big NFL? Who were the remember Tony Mandarich? Mm-hmm. He was supposedly on steroids, but there's been tons of
guys over the years.
Oh, yeah.
People don't care about NFL players. Half the Panthers team in the early 2000s got popped for it.
Yeah,
David Boston, remember him?
He looked
competitive bodybuilder. He got popped for it. A million guys in the NFL have been popped for it.
We don't hold him against. I mean, we don't hold it against the players who use steroids, even though it was at times where it was illegal in the National Football League.
Yeah,
can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, well, and one of the stories I heard from one of the guys that I talked to was in Denver.
Uh-huh.
He was a backup offensive lineman, and he was naturally like a 250-60 pound guy. And really what he was doing was trying to get to being a vested veteran.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me just in confidence, he's like, yeah, I do it because, you know, I need a job and I got a family. And, you know, so I kind of got that. I felt like most of the guys that did it in the NFL were doing it because they were trying to hang on and make a living. And they just couldn't because, you know, they just weren't naturally big. I was the other way around. I always had to watch my weight, but some guys just couldn't put weight on and couldn't put muscle on, and so, you know, they used it more for that reason than you heard guys trying to, you know, get more tackles or more interceptions or whatever.
Well, and you remember back in, I think it was like the mid-80s or something like that. I could be wrong in the timing of this, but you know, that's when a lot of players were using steroids, and the idea was if you were not using steroids, you're going to fall behind the curve, and you're not going to be on the team. And then fortunately, you know, they clamped down on it even more, and you know, it got players off the steroids, which was good. Now, some obviously stayed on them, and some are going to, you know, be violating stuff like that. But, that's, you can see how the point that you're making is true. It's like, you know, a lot of players started thinking, hey, if I don't do this, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, and I also used to always say, hey, look, I feel like if the guy across from me is on steroids, that I feel like I'm stronger than he is because he has to have that in order to get there. And I did it by working hard. And that's the thing, you know, you look at, but that's not always the case. Like I mentioned, there are some guys that are just trying to maintain their weight and stuff like that. So, yeah, but as far as that goes, it's kind of different in the NFL. But the other thing I always think about, though, is what about all the guys that did it right? You know, and so if you're in the Hall of Fame and you did it right, you never took anything like that, and now there's a guy getting in because he did that, then I feel like it's not fair to those guys.
Yeah. Well, like I mean, even staying on the baseball theme of things, too. Now, I know in this last year or so, Ken Griffey Jr. had some steroids. But again, you talk about somebody that you know, did it the clean way all the way through his regular baseball career, except for maybe the 1 year. And I mean, the only and you know, I'm sensitive to this just because, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, you know, where Ken Griffey Jr. grew up. And of course, I used to sit next to the guy who was his handler, you know, for Ken Griffey Sr., who handled Ken Griffey Jr., you know, growing up. And, you know, one of the things that was there is that, you know, I think the only thing that you can accuse Ken Griffey Jr. of is kind of like a Chad Ochocinco, Chad Johnson type of thing, where, you know, he ate fried food when everybody else wasn't eating fried food. I mean, he wasn't eating the gourmet meals. I mean, you know, he would, you know, just eat a lot of junk and stuff like that, like I will and you will and everybody else. And then, you know, come back and had such a great career.
Yeah, I mean, Junior was never linked to steroids anywhere that I saw. And yeah, you're right. The only knock on him was, yeah, maybe he could have worked harder on his physical conditioning. You know,
gifted. It really held back his career.
Well, no, some people feeling like me, you know, maybe that's why the injuries caught up to him in such a big way. Is that he was not a huge workout guy.
No, not at all.
Just so naturally gifted that he was able to overcome that.
And the reason I bring up Chad Johnson is that you know, he's still even now a noted McDonald's guy. Which is great. I mean, in fact, I'm surprised he doesn't have more McDonald's commercials because nobody promotes McDonald's as much as Chad Johnson. I mean, and, you know, I still remember, and I think, Dave, you'll remember these games too, and probably Bob, you'll remember them. A lot of times, you know, I'd go to a Bengal game, and he would have to go into the locker room before the half to go get an IV because of the fact that, you know, he ate so much from McDonald's that, and again, it's not like the food was bad. It's just like it wasn't nutritious enough, you know, to help if you're playing a 3-hour football game.
Yeah, he's got a unique diet for a prime athlete.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about some of these coaching vacancies because I'm seeing today two different coaches or potential coaches having second interviews. That would be Byron Leftwich with the Jags and Dan Quinn with the Bears. Is that where you expect both those guys to land, or what do you think?
Well, I think Leftwich is going to get done here. He is the first coach hired because he's had two quick interviews, and I thought it was going to be today, but it's right now. It hasn't happened yet. So I think Leftwich will be the first. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Quinn, he's also good. I think he has one more interview scheduled because I think he may be going to Miami. And obviously the fact that, you know, he's now up to like 6 or 7 teams on second interviews or first interviews or things like that is holding back his hiring. But I still think that, you know, he's up clearly for the Denver job. And he is up for Chicago, although just talking to some people in Chicago today, they think there's a good chance that Jim Caldwell is going to get that job.
Yeah, what's Jim Caldwell? He was out of football this year, wasn't he? Or was he like a consultant or something?
I don't think he was a consultant. I think he was just out of football. Nobody hired him.
What do you think about him as a coach? I mean,
he's a good coach.
Yeah, the only thing I remember is he always had the same expression on his face, whether he was angry or happy or elated or anything. But, you know, that's kind of what you want in a coach. He's very steady as far as his personality goes.
Yeah, and the players like him.
Yeah.
He's an offensive-minded coach. I mean, not that he called a lot of plays during his career, but he has some exposure and some expertise as far as calling some offensive stuff. But no, he's a good coach, and hey, it'd be great if he can get the Chicago job.
John, I was I sent these guys a list. I saw this article written by Nate Davis from USA Today, and he ranked the head coaching jobs from worst, best to worst. So I'll just give you from the bottom up. So he's got the worst job being the Texans, which is not a surprise. Surprise, the next worst one on his list anyway, the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree.
And obviously a lot of it is about, A, they don't have a quarterback, and B, they're around $74 million over the cap right now. So that's a bad one. He's got the Bears at 7. He's got the Minnesota Vikings job at number 6.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the Giants job at 5.
Yeah.
He's got the Broncos job at 4. He's got the Dolphins job at 3. At number 2, he's got the Las Vegas Raiders. And the number one coaching job, in his opinion, is the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now, the only thing I disagree with is that I would have Denver number 2. And I would put Miami a little bit down on the list. I wouldn't have them up that high. But, no, I would have Denver number 2. And then, you know, maybe the Dolphins number 4. But that list kind of jives with what I think.
Well, Dave, just quickly, Jacksonville number 1, though, is that just based strictly on the amount of money they have to spend? Because Shad Khan seems like, you know, we read those comments before the season. He seems like he's not Jerry Jones, but he's a bit of a meddler, saying, you know, he's going to have his say and his impact on this whole thing.
Well, it's not as much Shad, it's now his son. You know, his son who had been running the soccer team over in England and stuff like that. It's more him, and I think, you know, he's been more of the meddler. Certainly through the years, Shad has been a meddler, and that's obviously been a problem. But, no, the two things is that, okay, number one, you want the money, and they've got the cap room to do some things. And number two, they've got Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, so you have a quarterback, you have money, you can do some things. That's why they are, I think, the best job.
Yeah, and that's kind of how, you know, we were sort of rating them, John, because, you know, I feel like New Orleans being $74 million or whatever it is in the hole kind of gets offset a little bit because the Bensons, that family, it's pretty good ownership, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just writing down, I look at quarterback, the owner. You know, is it a football town? You know, a good football town, which I think Jacksonville is not.
Right, agreed.
And then, you know, cap room, those four things. Would you agree?
I agree, yeah, yeah.
What do you think's most important?
Quarterback.
I think it's the owner.
Quarterback.
Yeah? Because, I mean, Shad Khan, you were talking about his son. Remember he got in a Twitter battle with Unique Ngakoue?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't have that. I feel like if it comes from the top down and, you know, maybe you go get a quarterback.
But... See, but that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's easier said than done. But it's like, you know, but with the idea that, I mean, if you have the quarterback, he's the one that can make everything right. Because if things are going bad, you know, for the team, for leadership and everything else, the quarterback can lead. But also, too, if you're down in the game, he's the one that can bring you back to win.
Yeah, and Trevor Lawrence didn't have, like, a, you know, great year or anything.
He had Urban Meyer as head coach, Urban Meyer.
Yeah, you know, I just saw a podcast with him and Dan Dockich, and I was kind of impressed by him. I mean, it sounds like he's going to be able – I mean, John, he knows football. I mean, he
NFL
really
does. Football, but he knows football, yeah.
Well, football is football.
Not for him.
Yeah, but anyway, I thought it was fairly impressive as far as, you know, just the way he talked about it. But anyway, what's the big news today, John? Anything that stands out to you?
Not really. I mean, again, it's like it's still just a matter of, you know, you got Minnesota and Chicago getting their GM jobs resolved, still waiting to see, you know, what happens with the New York Giants now that he got Joe Shine in there as the general manager. You know, does he bring, you know, Brian Daboll as the head coach from Buffalo, or does he bring Leslie Frazier as the head coach, who's the defensive coordinator? They're both from Buffalo. So, but yeah, it was the big one was supposed to be the fact that Leftwich was going to get the Jacksonville job today, but it didn't happen.
Hey, John, I saw a story about Gronk, and I think it might have been TMZ that actually caught up with him and asked him about, you know, hey, you're going to play, you're going to retire. And in the past, he's basically said if it's not Brady, he's not playing. He didn't say that, but he said, if I had to answer the question today, right this minute, he'd lean toward retiring.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you expect? Do you expect him to follow suit with if Brady says I'm coming back for one more year, Gronk is back? Or
yes.
Yes, you do.
I do, yeah. I mean, yeah, because, you know, he's obviously tied to, you know, Tom Brady has been his entire career. And I think out of loyalty to him, I mean, he came out of retirement to be with Brady. And if if Brady does come back, and Brady right now is just 50-50. Simple as that. It's 50-50. Mm-hmm. You can guess one way, you can guess the other, and you're going to be still guessing because, again, right now he doesn't know. But it's 50-50 for him.
Hey, John, by the way, I just want you to know that you know, I had mentioned torture yesterday, possibly torturing you as far as your Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Here's what one texter said. Play country music in the background until John tells you who he voted for.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Would that work?
Well, I mean, I can take the headsets off.
What if I tape them to your head?
Well, you're gonna come over to the house and tape them to my head?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
And then strap you to a chair so you can't pull them off.
Yeah, yeah.
I have that Gorilla Glue tape. It's really good, John.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay.
You can't. I mean, it's like, you know, because if I say anything, then I lose my Hall of Fame vote.
I know.
And I'm not losing my Hall of Fame vote.
And I don't want to be part of that.
No.
So
you're going to take away the torture?
Yeah, taking the torture away. And
what,
I'm going
to
ask
what would be
you,
the worst part, being taped to the chair or having to listen to country music?
Having to listen to country music. I hate country music. I mean, it's like, it's awful. It's like
anyway, I thought it was a good idea. Jamal Adams, John, where are you with him? We were giving out grades today as far as, you know, and, you know, we did a what if, or, you know, what if they had not extended him and, you know, just paid him this year based on the year that he had and things like that. I mean, where do you stand? There was so much backlash after, you know, he gets hurt for the season. He played in 12 games. He actually really had pretty good stats. But there was a lot of times where you saw, okay, he wasn't the same player as he was last year. But I still contend that that was a good move and that he's one of the best football players on this team.
I agree. I mean, because, again, you look at, you know, his three Pro Bowl years and you saw the beginning of what could be a Hall of Fame caliber career because he's got that type of talent. And so it's like, you know, sure – he was injured, he had some problems. The scheme, obviously, you know, it wasn't as effective for him as it was the year before. It cost Ken Norton Jr. his job. And so that's just kind of the sad part about life in reality in the National Football League. But, no, I think that, you know, he's one of the strengths of this team and one of the better players in the league.
John, the 208 wants to know whether you would have – whether you would rather have Pete Carroll or Sean McVay as your head coach right now.
Pete Carroll.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, he's got the long success. He certainly... Because the one thing about McVay, as good as he is, there's no doubt that McVay's a great coach. And he set up a great tree of coaches that he's worked with and have moved on to different teams and continues to develop them. But the big thing with Sean is that you go year to year with Sean McVay, and you don't know when he's going to quit. I mean, you know, he's kind of like John Gruden in that sense, in the way that you know, he's very emotional. He can change on a dime, and then all of a sudden decide, you know what, I'm going to get out of this and go into broadcasting. Kind of like, you know, we're seeing this year somewhat likely with Sean McVay or Sean Payton. But you know, in the case of you know, Pete Carroll, I mean, he's all football, he's all coaching, and that hasn't changed and won't change.
Yeah, they should put Sean Payton in the booth with Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
Yeah, but again, that doesn't work because then you have two color analysts. Yeah.
You can have two color guys.
Yeah, John,
it'd be fun.
John, in terms of torture, somebody said, "What if Mark Rogers was singing country music with Urban Meyer on backup vocals?"
Yeah, that'd be pretty bad. But the one thing, at least with Mark Rogers, he'd mess up the words.
That might break you. They tie you down, and Urban Meyer and Mark Rogers come in, and they're singing country music to you. That might break you, John.
It won't break me. No, it won't
All
break
right.
me.
All right. Well, we know he's dedicated. We know Clayton is dedicated, that's for sure.
All right, John, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, they were the two most scrutinized positions heading into the season, so we'll grade how they did coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I thought that was a pretty good suggestion by the texter to torture John Clayton, to have Mark Rogers and Urban Meyer singing country music to John Clayton.
I was going to try to get some country music playing in the background, but... Yeah, it was maybe a little bit too last minute, but yeah, I'll probably have to leave John alone on that.
He's just not going to break, Dave. He's not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get him to talk about uniforms or something before he'll talk about his Hall of Fame vote.
Yeah.
But we continue going through the position groups of the Seahawks, handing out grades. You guys are free to weigh in as well, whatever grade you'd give these position groups. 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And I would say this is the position group we had the most concern level of consternation about this group, and that's the cornerbacks. And in the offseason, they signed Akella Witherspoon, who had, you know, been with the Niners, and we had talked about, you know, hey, when he was there, he was very uneven. He was either dealing with injury. He had been benched in San Francisco. They made him available. They didn't do anything to keep him. So they signed him. He doesn't play a game for you. Just did not work out at all. So you spent a few million on him. On the other side, Trey Flowers was starting for you. He is now a special teams ace for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Did you see him, by the way?
Yeah, I'm pulling for Trey. I'm pulling for him.
It's funny because he got a penalty for hitting the guy too soon on one of the punt returns. And then later on, he made a really good play. It's like, that's kind of Trey Flowers, I guess, right now.
Yeah, he actually sent out a tweet that I retweeted where I don't know if Hawks fans were giving him a hard time, but he said something about, you know, I wish all these 12s, he put in quotes, would leave me alone. Y'all got what y'all wanted. I'm like, yeah. I'm thinking, wow, what's going on? Like Seahawks fans going after him on social media or what's that about?
But, yeah, which is too bad. He's just the nicest kid. He really is. I mean, and I get that doesn't matter and everything. And he didn't, it was mystifying to me that he didn't play better, but he wasn't playing well here.
No.
And so it had to be done, but he's played well in the past.
His, I mean, arguably his rookie year was his most promising year. We got excited about a guy that never played corner, converted from safety at college and at the pro level playing corner, and played pretty well his rookie year, and then just, you know, was really uneven after that. But anyway, that's who you had. Those were your starters, presumably, going in. Trey Flowers, Akella Witherspoon, they're both gone. Trey Brown was there for five games, 10 tackles, one pass defended. DJ Reed was your guy. He was the stalwart there. Didn't play the whole season. Played 14 games. Had 78 tackles, 10 passes defended, two interceptions, and a fumble recovery. He had Sidney Jones, who played 16 games. He had 66 tackles, a tackle for a loss, 10 passes deflected. And then kind of a combo, John Reed, Bless Austin, 22 tackles, two passes defended, both from Reed. So that's your collective. That's your group of cornerbacks there. What grade would you give them?
Well, Bob, I hate to cop out on this, but I'm going to have to go with incomplete. And the reason why is because Trey Brown, I have a feeling, is going to be really good. I think he's a really good player, but he only played in five games. Mm-hmm. Was it the Jacksonville game, I think, that he went down maybe? Or no, it was Arizona. Yeah, he was making a play on the ball, and he didn't make the play because I think his patella tendon snapped. I'm not gonna cop out on the incomplete. I'm gonna give him a C-, though. But the thing is, maybe that's a little high. But I would say, like, you really can't tell. Because, you know, DJ Reed did play in 14 games. And by the way, the two interceptions in one game. But, like, Trey Brown, I think that really, that was a significant contribution from him. As a rookie, especially. You know how I'm about rookies. I just feel like if they do anything their rookie year, it's good. And you got that out of him. So, and I think we got a little bit of a glimpse of the future. I think it's also kind of interesting that the two best guys were the shortest guys, because everybody's always talking about, oh, the corners, you know, and that's not really a thing. I mean, obviously, if you have two guys that are playing the same, then you'll probably take the taller guy. But as far as, you know, that whole thing about the length in their corners and that's what they want, and that's the model. Well, yeah, but I think everybody probably thinks that. You don't really care as long as, you know, the guy's making plays. And so, yeah, the two what I called Mighty Mites. And I like that you put those two guys at the corner, and you got Quandre Diggs back there, who's, as Nick Ballor would say, 5'6". then, you know, you got it's kind of an interesting combination. But. And by the way, when we talk about this, it kind of brings home the whole nickel corner, because we haven't really talked about that. And that's something that Paul Moyer, we'll talk to later in the week, has talked about, that he thinks that's the number one position that they need to get locked down in free agency. So
yeah, Ugo was disappointing this year.
Yeah,
Ugo.
He really was. He really was.
You didn't have Marquise Blair out there. Obviously, he got hurt again. And Ugo just wildly uneven. And I would say took a big step back compared to what we expected. So,
isn't that a shame? That, like, Will Dissly, and you mentioned Marquise Blair, who I'd forgotten about. You know, you look at those. Isn't that a shame that those guys got hurt 2 years in a row, just never really could get going?
Yeah. I'm going to give the cornerbacks a D+. I mean, I just don't think you can allow as many passing yards as they did all season. Only one team was worse, and that was the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, they were 31st in the league. They were atrocious against the pass. And, you know, if we're going individuals, they're getting different grades. Obviously, we feel good about how DJ Reed played. You like how Trey Brown looked in the handful of games. But it was, for just grading the group as a collective, you can't be 31st in the league against the pass and get any – I mean, that's barely a passing grade. So D plus feels generous to me.
I would argue that a lot of those yards happened in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a couple of times where, you know, there were breakdowns and guys were, you know, getting beat deep. But mainly that was because there was some kind of a miscommunication. But, oh, my God. I mean, the deep crossers and the, you know, the 17-yard, you know, throw right over the linebackers' heads. I mean, I thought that's what really killed them.
The other spot, quarterbacks, Dave. Quarterbacks. So you got Russell Wilson played in 14 games, almost 65% completion, over 3,000 yards, 3,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, 6 picks. Geno Smith played four games, 68% completion, 702 yards, five touchdowns, one pick. So if you're just looking at stats, I mean, even Russell's touchdown interception ratio is great. He had a quarterback rating over 100. But, you know, from watching week in, week out, he wasn't great this year. It was a very off year for him because of injury. When he came back, he wasn't the same. So it was a down year. I would, and Geno played better than I'd ever seen him practice. I'll say that. But the bar for me and Geno was really, really low because I felt like every time I watched him in practice, I was just like, oh my goodness, if he ever gets into a game, we're in trouble. Just not one of those guys that seems to practice that well. But so he played above what I expected. Russell played below what I expected, and they're a 7-win team. So as far as that quarterback position goes, I'm going C+.
Yeah, I'm going with a B for the quarterbacks. Again, I'm not saying that they didn't use him the right way, but the injury, it was night and day as far as the numbers go before and after. Save a couple of games, you know, where Russ, you know, I guess against Houston, you know, he had a good game. But if you look at where he was before that injury, 72% completion, and I think it was the 7 or 8 games after that, he dropped down to 61. He only threw one interception before he got hurt, and then he threw 5. And look, I'll say he like that one that he threw against Arizona was a bad one. I mean, that's not good by Russ. That's not what you expect. But and then, you know, Geno, I know it was Jacksonville's defense, but that doesn't make as much difference as people think, in my opinion. But he threw open receivers a couple of throws, and it wasn't so much that he completed the pass. It was how he completed it. It was the fact that he was leading the receivers away from the defender. That's talented. So, but I don't think Geno Smith's going to be back considering what happened, you know, after the last game.
Yeah, you threaten to beat up police officers and have the head of your team security come down to calm you down while they strap you to a chair. Yeah, not the best way to earn a spot on the roster the following season. All right, coming up, the NFL is weighing in on a coaching hire, and we're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Sean Payton had his farewell press conference, not his retirement press conference. They made sure not to mention that, but he's stepping away, and he spoke for over 90 minutes yesterday, so we're going to play all that right now. But no, here's kind of the simple explanation for why he's stepping away from coaching.
I felt the time was right for me. I felt the time was right, and it's something that I've been thinking about. You know, I think that, look, you have close friends in the industry. I've lost a few close friends in this industry in the last 2 or 3 years, and also, forget football. There's other things. I looked at it as an opportunity also to see my kids more, to travel some more, to get in better shape.
I wonder how old his kids are, because he's the same age as I am.
How old is he? He's 50s.
I think he's 57, 58, 56. Something like that.
You're 57, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, listen, if that's what he wants to do, you know, that's a man who's, if I'm a Saints fan, I would prefer that. I would obviously miss him as a head coach, but I don't want a coach there who doesn't have his heart in it. So if he doesn't, he's leaving millions on the table. He's still under contract. Good for him. He's making the right decision for him. And I assume we'll see him back at some point. And again, I would just wonder how much he was looking at. We're $75 million over the cap, and we don't have a quarterback. So that, you know, had he had Drew Brees, who's, you know, at 30 years old, and they had salary cap room, is he making that same decision?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about the family he mentioned. He's got, you know, a couple kids that are 23, 24 years old, something like that. So, you know, and then you're going to have grandkids pretty soon. And, I mean, it's just their life is – it's a huge commitment. And that's what we always talk about, why a lot of the ex-players don't go into coaching, because it's just the hours are ridiculous. You know who's good buddies with him? Our guy, Mark Schlereth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think he actually is a consultant for them. They have him as an offensive line consultant, just football, running game, stuff like
Schlereth's
that.
Schlereth's got a good gig, man.
He does. Yeah, he's got his he's got a podcast going. I think he's got chili. I wonder if
he's
still
got
has
hot
the
sauce, right?
Yeah,
have
I don't
some
know
kind
about
of hot sauce.
I know he's got chili, and I don't. I'm not sure. You might be right, but yeah, he's got all kinds of stuff going on, and he's. Yeah, he's all over the place. But yeah, Sean Payton is just one of those really good coaches that I feel like he's going to get back into it. But man, that was it really, Lefko, was it really like 90 minutes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to look to make sure, and there were some transcripts written up, and they said it lasted over 90 minutes yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Matt Hasselbeck is on with Mike Salk every Wednesday from 9 to 10. They asked him a lot of good stuff about the last weekend of the NFL playoffs we just saw, the divisional round, and specifically the overtime rules. And Hasselbeck kind of explained why he doesn't think they will change anytime soon.
When I've sat in those competition committees meetings when I was an executive committee member with the NFLPA, basically those conversations are very data-driven with medical personnel. And there are things like, hey, we really care about health and safety. Like, here's the amount of plays players play typically in a game. And now with hurry-up offense and all this other kind of stuff, guys are actually playing more plays in a shorter amount of time. And so it's hardest on the bigger guys usually. And if the bigger guy goes out, now your quarterbacks are in danger. And now the product is in danger. And so it's a lot of time it's a health and safety thing.
So let's add an 18th game. I'm sorry, Matt. I can't buy that. I can't buy that. I'm not saying they have zero concern, but I think when money is there to be made, that takes precedence. So
you're right.
Yeah.
Well, I think I mentioned that yesterday, that is definitely part of the discussion, that they'll make it. They'll make it about the injuries. The one thing that is was, you know, interesting that he brought up is that, yeah, with these offenses now, they are running a lot more plays.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more plays. So, well, you look at how good of shape those offensive linemen are in. We don't really appreciate that. I mean, those guys, running 20 yards down the field and running back to the huddle and everything, I think it's more tiring when you have to lock up with a 300-pound guy and, you know, do everything you can to keep. I mean, that takes a lot of your wind away. So I knew that it was going to come down to something about, you know, safety in an inherently unsafe game.
Sweeping the dial.
I thought this was interesting because you usually don't see the NFL, the league office, weighing in on teams' head coaching hires. But today on ESPN Radio, Troy Vincent, who's the executive vice president of football operations for the NFL, said it's time for Eric Bieniemy to get a head coaching job.
Black coaches in particular, and many others outside of that circle, we are still looking for that grace to be afforded to Coach Bieniemy. That has been afforded to Brad Childress, Pat Shurmur, Doug Peterson, and Matt Nagy. All shared the same role as Coach B. None have had the success. He's going to a fourth straight championship game. Calls plays, shares the play calling duties with Coach. We're still looking for that grace to be extended.
Interesting that it's coming from him, but I don't think he's wrong. The Bieniemy thing confuses me, and that's why I keep asking Clayton about it, because he felt like the hottest name last year. So you figured, okay, here's the Chiefs once again looking like a Super Bowl-bound team, potentially playing in the AFC title game. His resume couldn't look better. And then I don't know what happens in the interviews. I don't know what he says that maybe owners or GMs don't like. I mean, you know, Clayton says he curses too much. I'm sorry. I'm gonna call nonsense on that. Every coach I've ever been around, seen on film, they all curse. I mean, it's what they do for the most, outside of Tony Dungy. But I don't know. We're not in the meetings. We're not in the interviews. But I've got to wonder what's going on in there if he's not getting more consideration.
Yeah, well, and he's kind of explaining it as if there's some kind of collusion, but maybe it is that. I don't know. And, you know, I always talk about how some guys are head coaches, some aren't. The other thing, he's been, you know, hurt because of, going into the playoffs, and a lot of teams mm-hmm. like to get their staff ready right away. But although we're not really seeing that this year, are we? You know, they're still vacant jobs, and still, like, why is Leftwich not been hired, you know, with Jacksonville? It's kind of like they're dragging their feet this year. So maybe that won't hurt him this year. But I really want him to get a head coaching job just because I want to see what he's like. I remember him as a player. You see him on the sidelines. I think it'll be interesting to see his personality come out.
We'll see if he gets a gig. It just doesn't, you know, just in terms of who we're hearing about, you're not hearing his name very often as compared to Quinn and Leftwich and some of those other names. But we'll see. Coming up, he's been pulling double duty the last few weeks, so perfect guy to break down both the Rams and the Seahawks. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.